Welcome to another edition of Respond to Resilience, along with my co-hosts, Dr. Stacey Raymond and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Bradford Cole, Executive Director of K9 First Responders, Inc., and Brad will be talking about connecting in crisis, lessons from the halls of Sandy Hook to the halls of Congress. We invite you to like and subscribe to our channel on YouTube, Respond to Resilience, on Facebook, Respond to Wellness, Inc., and on BBS Radio and Apple Podcasts. Our website with all the past episodes is respondertv.com. We will be right back with Brad Cole right after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilient strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMTB. And we'd like to welcome Brad Cole of K9 First Responders. Brad, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Before we get into the conversation, we'll read a little bit of your bio here. Brad is the Executive Director and All Hazards Psychological Trauma Responder of K9 First Responders, Inc. Mr. Cole is K9 FR's subject matter expert and thought leader with 39 years of experience in the security, crisis management, and investigative professions. A responder to the Sandy Hook Elementary School tragedy, deployments include United States Capitol incidents, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania synagogue shooting, Boston Marathon bombings, Las Vegas concert massacre, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting, as well as peer support for public safety. Brad was deployed to Smyrna, Delaware to assist in the aftermath of a 19-hour prison siege, hostage taking, and homicide. And Brad's certifications include active shooter, hostile event response, program specialist, psychological first aid, post-traumatic stress management, critical incident stress management, and mental health first aid. Those credentials are impressive. Welcome, Brad.
Thank you.
Samantha was a Sandy Hook Elementary School student. After what happened in December of 2012, she didn't want to leave the house.
The city of Milford was met by a tragedy at Jonathan Law High School. A very popular student was tragically killed.
We're with the men and women of the Las Vegas Fire Department and American Medical Response at the worst times of their lives.
My mother took me to school, which had been set up as a gathering place for our community. Spartacus was a giant of a dog with big dark eyes that looked directly into mine and seemed to read my heart. In my opinion, having the dog teams there was the single most important element in helping our school recover.
I saw kids who don't talk to anyone stop every single morning in front of myself and Brad and his team to talk to those dogs every day.
And just having that calming presence of the dogs there, I think was the thing that made it better in the immediate aftermath. You have this connection that I don't think you're gonna make with a human.
The dog was the key to start a healing process for a person. And if you had read that to me in a book, I would have never believed it.
So, Brad, I wanted to ask, I'll start the questions by asking you, what does your organization, K9 First responders do that makes it so unique?
We have the ability through our dogs to help clinicians, peer support, critical incident stress management team members connect and engage earlier during and after a crisis and incident in the mental health process to assist them in getting an individual or individuals into the mental health system sooner than later.
Okay, so what is it that dogs can do that humans can't do?
Dogs don't judge. They exist. One of my favorite cartoons is Snoopy and Charlie Brown sitting on top of a doghouse just looking up at the sky. They bear witness without passing judgment. And studies have shown that people are more trustworthy with a dog or an animal. And we leverage that to connect and engage and start a conversation with those impacted. The toughest, most seasoned, some might say crusty, veteran of a service says, "I'm fine. I don't need anybody." But they'll talk to the dog for a half hour before talking about what's really bothering them.
Mm-hmm. Brad, can you talk about the difference between what your dogs do and therapy dogs?
Therapy dogs provide a very important function and service to the community overall. They're more of a passive support, feel good, help just the general morale and well-being of people overall. Canine first responders provide an active support to clinicians and other crisis member team members by being active actors and utilizing and taking steps forward to make that connection and engagement. That's our primary function. Mm-hmm. And once we do that and get the conversation going, and as we say when we train our volunteers, get a person to walk, talk, chew gum in some sort of equilibrium for them, whatever is their equilibrium, then they're able to exist, to be, to share what's bothering them, and eventually accept some information that's tools for them, and when needed, accept additional higher-level care. And so that's the difference between the two dogs. Our dogs are used for very pointed action and have a goal in what their activities are. They're a tool. Bonnie and Stacy know, I sometimes refer to us as the used car salesman in mental health. We use the dogs to bait and switch.
And it works. We've seen it with our own eyes.
Right. Yeah. Can you describe how they actively help people, I guess, come down from the crisis? Like as you said, get the individual back to talking, walking, chewing gum. How do they do that?
Well, first of all, on the physiological level, the dogs through the parasympathetic nervous system, by petting and interacting, stress is lowered. Mm-hmm. That is key. It allows someone to be there in the moment. They're not, hopefully not thinking about the tragedy they witnessed or experienced or were a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And the dogs don't pass judgment. One of our toughest jobs as handlers is being quiet at that moment. If we're working an active scene, we want to help people. But our job at that point is to let the dog do the work and let the dog connect with somebody, let the dog lead into them. We have a little dog named Gizmo on our teams and 3.5-pound Miki. Some people just want a whole Gizmo. And so it's whatever that person needs and feels they need at the moment. And it kind of brings them down. It gets them, for lack of a better term, stabilized or grounded.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support.
We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
Brad, you've responded to a number of high-profile incidents. I imagine you've been to many more besides the ones we listed. Where in the timeline of a critical incident should you be activated, or when should people call you for support?
Trauma happens as an event is started. It's called zero-hour behavioral health management. Traditional response protocols, you know, used to be 24, 48 hours after. We learned through the responses to Sandy Hook and Parkland and Pittsburgh and Las Vegas that those mental health injects should be as soon as something's going on, because the trauma is taking place. The foothold started there. So we can be present in at that particular phase as a passive stress management support. So when someone's demobilizing or if it's a long-term event, be at the hospital with the injured officers, their family, their colleagues, for example, or members of service. And as that connection's made, we can lay the groundwork and the foundation for future interactions to help a person come into a debrief. On more than one occasion, we've had, in one department in particular, two different members of service for a fire department walked in, they met everybody, and the debrief was occurring, and these two members sat in different areas, and when they went around the circle to introduce themselves, the first thing out of each of their mouths was, "We're here, we stayed here because of the dog." I just sat there and just tried to pick my jaw up off the ground, like, okay. But it's whatever they needed, whatever pretext they wanted. And so that is our first course, that we're able to work that scene moving forward. It doesn't mean we have to be there. But ideally, we want to be able to lay the groundwork and the foundation so the clinicians, peer teams, CISM teams can do their job more effectively.
And is that typically hours or days into the event? Like, where do you find yourself showing up?
The quickest we've been in on scene at an incident's been about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that was to a very bad school shooting that happened in Milford, Connecticut. Stabbing that occurred. And we got called into that situation. Other times in Vegas, we were there 12 hours after the call. So it really depends on the protocol, the departments. Some departments want to use us for debriefings, which may be 72 hours later. So it's whatever meets the needs of the department. We don't dictate what they need. We just let them know we're available for X, Y, and Z, and they decide what works for them.
And do you at K9 First Responders have a charge associated with your services?
We don't charge. We don't pass along any fees. We do ask for the occasional cup of coffee or a prime parking spot so we can have our cars close by for our equipment and for our water and for our food for our dogs. But that's it. We don't charge anything. We're a 501c3 IRS nonprofit, and our donors assist us in our mission.
How can people donate to you? How do they find you?
On our website, which is k9fr.org, there's a donation page, and it clicks over to PayPal, or they can mail us a check if they feel more comfortable with that. And our address, our contact information is on the website. And other times, donations of kind could be very important. If it's a corporation where we've had some corporations donate our uniforms, some corporations where our radios, we're dispatched by a public safety access point. So all our operations are very familiar to public safety overall, and it could be recognized as such. So anything along those lines that could help us with our mission is greatly appreciated.
So how could one of our listeners or a department deploy you or activate the process? What's the best way to go about that?
The preferred way is I like to meet them ahead of time, have a cup of coffee, so they know me and some of our teams, and we know them. So when the proverbial stuff hits the fan, they're not trying to understand what we do. They just activate us. But they can call our dispatch number, which is, again, manned by a dispatch center 24/7. And we're ever bridged out. And depending upon where we need it, we'll contact and say, hey, look, what's your needs? How can we assist? What do you need from us? And we offer a variety of things. We like to stay in our lane whenever possible. But there are certain circumstances and incidents where we're fully trained as crisis team members, CISM, psychological first aid, post-traumatic stress management. So sometimes resources are short, and by specific request, we can extend our capabilities and provide assistance that way as well, if requested.
Great. Can you talked about this a little bit. I'm wondering if you can go a little deeper into maybe some examples of how, in the aftermath of one of these tragic incidents, how do the dogs shift people in ways that humans simply can't do it?
It's highly individual, but in a similar theme or thread that we see is they draw the attention and the mind and the being of the person and brings them present, not what they witnessed an hour ago. Mm-hmm. And it's a diversion, so to speak. They get to pet, they get to have permission to put themselves on hold. And the later, by extension, allow themselves to be human. And so the dogs, through that emotional connection, can do what we can't. And depending upon the resources available for the department, if it's a large incident, sometimes all the resources for the department are just as impacted as those that they're serving. So sometimes you bring in outside resources, which is really kind of a good thing, but people are concerned about whether they'll be trusted or whether they'll be accepted by a member of service. And the dogs don't have that issue.
Plus, it's right. A confidential conversation if they're talking to the dog.
Right. We are followed underneath HIPAA, and we don't even tell amongst ourselves anything unless it's harm to self or harm to others. And, we practice the Sergeant Schultz version of confidentiality. We know nothing.
So there's research to show between humans, you know, if one person offers a hug to somebody else, that there's a hormone called the bonding or the calming hormone, like oxytocin, is released in the body. And also cortisol. When that happens, cortisol is reabsorbed, and it's not as much of a factor. You know, the stress hormone cortisol is not creating that physiological stress response as much. Do you think that the same mechanism is happening when someone pets the dog? What
Absolutely.
Do you think is happening? Yeah. Is there any evidence? I'm just curious.
Yes, there's evidence, and across the board of a variety of studies that show that cortisol levels are decreased. The half-life of cortisol is not just something that dissipates over the same amount of time that it's there. Mm-hmm. So again, to address the issue of being in an incident sooner than later, we can address the issue of cortisol and its production through the touch and contact with the dog as well.
Right.
And so through all those things that you've said, the studies have indicated stress, blood pressure, cortisol levels, the processing of the memory is positively, in fact, impacted in terms of stress, negative stress influence by the dog.
Huh. Right. So looking at that as a trauma therapist, how I take that to mean is that by getting in there quicker, you're lowering the cortisol and you're paving the way for this mitigating factor, and their trauma should be a little bit less interfering down the line because they've been mitigating it right at the beginning and at the start real time.
Correct. I mean, the memory consolidation gets impacted in a beneficial way for down the line service by a clinician or by peer support, plus that connection and engagement. So that definitely occurs. And again, when we're on scene, it's not our job to impart information or anything. Mm-hmm. It's to make that connection and engagement and let the person know we're there, because later on down the line, that person will look at us and said, you saw me at my worst and you did not judge me.
Brad, you've been to some of the most high-profile tragedies in the U.S. in the last few decades. You're going out, you're going to some pretty highly charged scenes, I would imagine, not only with the civilian public, but also with other responders needing needing kind of the help and support of the dogs. So how about your team? Like, how do you do a mental health check? How do you reset if you're feeling emotionally stressed while you're out there doing your mission?
First of all, we practice what we preach. We try to limit ourselves and the dogs as well, because they're like emotional sponges. They'll take in the negative energy from those that we are interacting with. And we'll work the dog, depending upon the scene, 2 to 6 hours. If it's a very hectic scene, after 2 hours, we pull out. If we're visiting a fire department just to get a check on the members there, we're sitting in their dining area having lunch or dinner or breakfast with them. One, the dog's very happy, especially if they're making bacon. And two, it's not as much of a stressful scene. Mm-hmm. But for ourselves, we have a decompression routine. Each handler has their own routine they go through. One of our handlers goes to a McDonald's and gets her dog a naked hamburger. I go through, my old partner Spartacus, and Nico and I do this now currently, is we'll find a body of water or someplace with a nice sunset, and we'll have a glass of wine, not a bottle, a glass, and we'll just sit, and he and I will kind of look at each other and say, it's been a day, and we'll just allow ourselves to have the feelings and the emotions and the thoughts of the day pass through. One of the things that we train our volunteers to do is that while we're interacting, we're also watching for signs, telltales of a person, if they're good, if they're not good, red flags on the horizon. So we're processing a lot of information. So we try to bifurcate that, but sometimes you don't have the luxury of recognizing the horror they're talking about, because you're looking at them trying to figure out, okay, what are red flags coming in? What should we be aware of? And again, hopefully, if we're doing our job properly, not really talking as much, but trying to take in the information. Mm-hmm. The aftermath is when we think about, okay, what's going on? And if we can, we try to let it flow through us instead of collect as a bucket. We just have a bucket with a big hole. And we hopefully don't let it live there.
You know what just occurred to me, Brad, is that not only are you diffusing the first responders that you're working with or the community members, but you're also diffusing yourself, because the dogs are serving a dual purpose and they're there for you as well.
That's correct. I mean, our dogs are highly bonded with us, but what's different than other types of dogs, we'll talk about it, like the police comfort dogs. Our dogs sense and interact and engage and want to engage with a person who's giving off stress hormones. And it could be Gizmo. I remember there was one harbor master that was very, very agitated and was yelling on a phone. And Gizmo jumped off his handler's lap, went up behind the guy and started pawing and then eventually tugging this harbor master's pant leg. And if you ever have a picture of Gizmo, I think we have some that we sent. You know, it's very interesting to see what happens. But our dogs also know us, and they will sit there, and they're our partners in the fullest sense. So they help us as well. Plus, we help each other. We will debrief if we can at night and in the morning. Definitely in the morning, at least get a good breakfast in us and sit and listen to each other.
Is that what you're describing? Is that more of an innate ability of the dogs to detect someone's stress hormones, or is that trained or a combination?
For our level, it's a exposure and the bedside manner, so to speak, of the dog. Some dogs are great as therapy dogs, but if they cannot connect and engage in a variety of conditions, environments, and cultures, then the person may be like this dog's not interested in me, or am I so impacted that the dog doesn't want to be with me? So when we evaluate our dogs, we look to see how they are with people in general.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that behavior of like Gizmo tugging on the distressed man's pant leg, does it come from like pack behavior? Like we want to make sure that everyone in the pack is okay, and so we need to bring this guy down because he's clearly an aberration. He's stressed out. The rest of us are doing okay. So do you think it comes from that? Like to make sure that the pack is okay?
I'm not sure, and I'm not an animal behaviorist, so okay. I really would be winging that answer.
Okay.
You know, and I'd be feel like more like a politician trying to answer it for you on those part. But the dogs, the pack, so to speak, is really the family environment. The dogs just sense something that's going on. When we were in Las Vegas and for the concert shooting, we were at a debriefing. It was a large debriefing, and the explosive ordnance people were over on one side. And you talk about crusty. These men and women had their two units of their explosive ordnance division, have their own building. They stay to themselves. They don't talk to anybody. And we had Clarence over there, which is 165-pound St. Bernard. And one of the members there was talking, saying, oh, I'm all right. It was a tough time for me. And, you know, we're not happy about a few things, but we're doing okay. And then Clarence just put his big old paw on top of the knee of that person that was speaking. And then everything just changed. You know, the eyes welled up and the person really just said what was on their mind. And that incident in that moment was watershed, because that gave permission to the other 35 members there to be human and to open up.
Yeah.
And my dog Spartacus did the same thing with the union president about an hour later.
Do you have any way of tracking progress, Brad, after you've been at a department or an incident? After the fact, do you do any follow-up visits or measurement tools?
Yes and no. Everything that we do, we don't take names, we don't take numbers. We do not, we respect someone's privacy. So from that aspect, we really can't track the KPIs. We can say number of people we roughly interacted with, broad topics of do we have any specific interventions or specific requests that we had to do versus wellness. But it's really tough from that aspect of a KPIs to identify specific individuals. On the flip side, we do a couple things. For follow-up, we will offer our services. And we'll use Las Vegas as an example because it was really a multifaceted response. We went out at the 90-day mark because that happened to be New Year's Eve. Rearousal, snipers on rooftops. It was a SEER 1 event for Las Vegas, and they were just amped up again, and naturally so. And then we went back to provide support for the annual, the first October 1. We went back the another year as well. And we view success as, did they want us back? Are there repeat attempts to say, come on back, we need you, et cetera. Another form of success that we view are departments that see the impact of the dog and bring their own dogs into their peer support or SISM team. And so we've seen that happen as well. And that makes us proud that they're serving the needs of their members that way. Finally, what we do is, respecting boundaries is very important in this type of work, as we know. Mm-hmm. And so we may have people we're very concerned about, but it's not to the level that we need to raise a red flag. But all our dogs have social media pages. So if someone wants to stay in touch, they can.
Okay.
You know, and they could follow it. You know, we had after an incident at Jonathan Law High School with the murder of a high school senior on her prom day, the kids afterwards during the summer break would follow our dogs on social media. They don't have to. They just know we're there. We give them cards and say, hey, you're more than welcome to. Well, you know, trying to get a teenager to do anything, to even go to the other side of the house to take the garbage out, is very difficult. But we'd have teenagers driving 5, 10, 15 miles out of the way. We'd be at a carnival someplace or something, come over, give us a hug, the dog a hug,
yeah,
and then leave. So we view that as success. And what we did learn, especially from Sandy Hook, is that the connection with the dogs does not bring back memories, the negative memories. It brings back the hope and the positive memories of what occurred, which is very important.
Our mission at Responder Wellness, Inc. is to subsidize or provide free of charge safety equipment and wellness services to first responders, including police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and 911 operators throughout Connecticut. Resources include scholarships to train new EMTs, a responder and veteran-only AA group in Danbury, Connecticut, as well as police vests, a fire and EMS boot program, yoga classes, gym memberships, and t-shirts. The founder of Responder Wellness, Inc. co-leads a peer support group sponsored by Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Responder Wellness, Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3. Find us on the web at responderwellness.org, on Facebook at Responder Wellness, Inc., or email us responderwellness@gmail.com. Responder Wellness, Inc., putting responders first.
So, Brad, when people need your services, need the dog services, can you give us a little sense of the range of the different kinds of scenes that you work with and that the dogs work with?
It's almost easier to say what we don't work with. Mm-hmm. when we started this concept and the founding members put this together, we never thought the type of scenes we've been at. We work with all public safety agencies. We work often with police, fire, EMS, corrections, EOC. We work with SWAT CERT teams. We work with bombings, mass casualty events, mass casualty incidents, prison seizures. It just anything that is a tragedy that unfortunately the news people feel like they need to be at. Mm-hmm. We could do. Yeah. And also a little side note is that we worked with members of the media as well. Mm. We generally don't like to work with the media just overall, but there's certain media that is respectful of what has happened, but who's highly impacted. Mm-hmm. Because they're getting it from both sides. People don't like the media at these scenes. They have a job to do. Plus they've documented stuff that is obviously traumatic for them to see.
So I have a question about training. So you have volunteers. How do you train people to bring the dogs in? Just tell me a little bit about that.
What we do is we have a 3-day weekend of training with 16 hours of prerequisite training ahead of time. All our team members have general life experiences. We're going to be amping up to probably 2/3 of our members being from public safety. That's more due to situation with COVID, where therapy groups overall have not been visiting as much. And we'd like a good exposed handler and dog. So we first look at the what we call the visitation profile, lifestyle of the handler. A great therapy dog may do once a month reading at a public library to 5th and 6th graders. That dog may not be successful as one who works as a therapy dog at a high school or in a hospital who's regularly exposed to loud noises, different smells, different cultures, those sorts of things. In a lot of cases, it's really working with the handler. When we evaluate the dog, we'll see if they're able to connect and engage and how they're tied into the handler as well. It's changing the optic of the handler on how we're doing a service. And for that training, we'll go through the deployments. We have Steve Cromando, who's one of the top crisis managers and educators in the nation, who helped me put together a lot of this program. Mm-hmm. He will come in for a day, and he'll just say, look, this is the reality of what you're going to be dealing with, and go through examples of World Trade Center, airplane crashes, et cetera, and provide insights that might not otherwise be available to a lot of different other organizations. And then we work and we bring in some of our clients. We call them clients because they're partners and clients, what the expectations are when we walk into a facility or to a department or to an agency. And then we also bring in different areas where we have psychologists and psychiatrists that work with children. And we teach the different developmental stages of a child and how the interactions with the child is going to vary from point A to point B. And then we have, obviously, how you deal with first responder culture. You know, a member of corrections is different than a member of the fire service or police. Mm-hmm. A paid service and a volunteer service, there's certain considerations that you need to be able to address and be aware of. And through our deployments, we're, I guess it's a dubious honor of being exposed to and seeing many different approaches to supporting public safety personnel, some which are fantastic and others that we've elected not to follow. Mm-hmm. And so we have a library of resources and real life events to be able to back up the academic approach that we give.
You touched on this before, Brad, but can you talk just a little bit more about the difference between passive support and active support?
Passive support is a dog walks in and just someone lets them pet them. And in our world, the canine first responder world, it's a morale, feel good moment. There's no goal. There's no objective beyond the fact of just coming in and doing a wellness visit in general to a fire station. And, you know, to say they've had a very busy call volume, you know, for a couple of months and a couple of tough calls, nothing that really raised to the level of a critical incident, but say short manpower, you know, COVID impacted, you know, scheduling or whatever, that would be the passive support. It's just kind of a feel good moment. And I'm not discounting that because that's very, very important. Mm-hmm. The active approach, or the active scene that we do requires the training in order to know how to use the dog to achieve the objective that happens to be in line with you as clinicians or peer support are doing. Because if depending upon the scene, we may be one of the first touches an impacted person has. So we want to lay the proper foundation for you or peer teams or system team to do their job.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some great photo moments you have had with the dogs. I heard you speak about it on another podcast where, and I'm not sure which dog it is, had a moment with the president. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Canine Clarence. Clarence is a... is one of our founding dogs. He's a beautiful 165, 175 pound St. Bernard. We were called down to the U.S. Capitol for that particular deployment to provide support immediately after the passing of the Capitol Police officer that was rammed into at the barracks, and as well as another officer who was injured. And as the officer was laying in honor in the rotunda, we had our dogs up there staged as support, just out of view. And President Biden just happened to come by. He's a dog person, and he knelt down and gave Clarence a hug. And we don't take photographs when we're working. I mean, and someone happened to take a photograph of that and send it to our handler, Bill Gordon, who also is a deputy chief of police of Greenfield, Massachusetts. And it was just a nice recognition. The White House, I believe, did send Deputy Chief Gordon a bill for the president's jacket for dry cleaning, but that's a different story. And that's a joke, by the way. That's not.
We'd love to hear if you have any other thoughts, things we didn't cover that you'd like to share.
What we do is different than a therapy dog or even the police comfort dogs that are out there, because, again, both do a very valuable service. The police comfort dogs and fire comfort dogs and EMS are wellness. They provide a good feeling for an agency or a department. One of the things that concerns me at times is that sometimes they'll try to be used in a fashion as an active stress management tool, and the handler may not be fully trained to do so. They have the great instincts to understand that the dog can help in that situation, but they don't have the training, knowledge, or experience to make that happen without the risk of causing harm. And again, everything that we do is from the optic of those that we serve. Our dogs are not called crisis dogs. Our dogs are not called therapy dogs. Because once again, you go to a long-term member of service for whatever agency or department you're at, and there's a chance that that officer or that employee or that fireman says, you know, I'm so messed up, I need a therapy dog. Or the indirect or very subtle reiterating of, I'm in a crisis dog is here.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. All right.
One of the things that we had happen was we were at a high school. I believe this was a response to a murder-suicide, father-son. And the dogs were there, and this one kid was talking to another. I was just out of like 5-6 feet away. So I wasn't directly interacting with them. And one student says, why are the therapy dogs here? And the other student said, no, they're canine first responders. And this guy said, well, what's the difference? He said, they're canines and they're first responders. First responders help people.
Is that how you started the name, or did that precede that?
It was already there because I wanted to avoid the, the subtle reminder of why we were there.
And so you know, Brad.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say that Stacy and I have seen you bring your dog into a firehouse, and it's just magical to watch. Uh-huh. And you're very, very quiet, and your presence is also very special in those moments, because you can tell that you also have a really high skill level. And it's amazing to watch those dogs pick the people out in the room who really need the help. Uh-huh. Because time and time again, Stacy and I have both seen that in a room. Uh-huh. And I just want to commend you, because it's an amazing thing to watch, and what you're doing is amazing, and we fully support you.
Well, you know, thank you very much. It's support of clinicians like yourself and agencies who get what we do. And it involves a lot of trust, because I had one department call me up. The chief called me up and said, we need you at this scene. It's developing. And I said, what's going on? They said, you'll figure it out when you get there. I'm like, okay. And I knew why I was there. It was a very traumatic scene. And it was a suicide of a member's wife with his gun. And that's public knowledge, so I'm not speaking out of turn. But having that trust from command staff down, we're honored, we're humbled. It's something where we've been invited to be with the men and women of public safety during the worst times, and oftentimes before their own close associates could really decompress with them. And so we take it as a honor and as a responsibility, and we definitely appreciate your words.
Brad, as we appreciate your mission very much, how can people find you and get in touch with you?
Our website is K9 First Responders, which is k9fr.org. And we have our dispatch number there as well as email address. And we're dispatched 24/7. We would rather be on scene or closest to the event timeline as possible for what we've discussed earlier in the program, mm-hmm. for connection engagement. We don't charge, and we're fully insured, by the way. So we're insured as a typical therapy dog organization would be, but also we have a social services rider on top of what we do for our active participation supporting a peer team, clinicians, or a crisis team. And they'll reach out to us, and depending upon the situation, we could be there right away, or, you know, give us a heads up that we'll need 3 or 4 dog teams in a day or two. And that's a good start. Ideally, I would like someone to reach out to me and say, "Hey, Brad, I'm interested. Can we have a cup of coffee?" I'd say, "Sure." And it could be, you know, it could be in Norwalk, Connecticut. It could be in Boston, Massachusetts. I was talking with a department in Georgia yesterday afternoon. Whatever it is, like to set up the protocol, get us squared away. So when something does happen, you turn to us to help versus turning to us to find out what happens and what we can do.
Yeah, I'm curious. Do the teams fly, drive, or combination?
Combination of both. You know, we have an excellent relationship with JetBlue, and you know, they have all our handlers' profiles and have a rather thick dossier on each of us. But they're great. Sometimes there's a period of time for about 8 months we were flying almost every other month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'd see some of the same flight attendants on the planes or the pilots. So it's almost like a mini reunion at times.
Hopefully the dogs are getting frequent flyer points as well.
Oh, you know, JetBlue treats us great. They'll make sure that, you know, we have plenty of room. We get preferred boarding. And, you know, they know our dogs, with the exception of 2 of our dogs, are not service dogs because we serve others. And they're very, very supportive of that. When we had to fly teams in it on a moment's notice down to D.C., we flew some teams in from Boston and from Orlando. I drove down. And, you know, I'm just so grateful for, you know, all our sponsors and partners' cooperation, but it makes it easier. Hotels where we need to stay at, mm-hmm. We have some great connections, and they make sure. I try to stay at business class hotels at least. So our going back to self-care, each dog and handler have their own room, and so they could decompress and they could do what they need to quietly.
Mm-hmm. Brad, this has been a fascinating discussion about absolutely incredible project and mission that you've created with your team, and we are just looking forward to sharing this with our community. Thank you for all the great pictures that you also added to give a little more kind of context to what you're talking about. We wish you all the best, and thank you for being our guest on Responder Resilience.
Thank you for having me, and everyone stay safe and be well.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Brad. You too.
Thanks.
Just want to remind everyone to like and subscribe. We're on YouTube, Responder Resilience channel, Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. We're also on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, and our website is respondertv.com. Stay safe. Be kind to yourself. Take care.